Totnes Breakfast.
Good morning and welcome to the full Totnes Breakfast on Sound Art Radio 102.5 FM with me, Peter Shearn. On a Wednesday morning, it's the 14th of April 2021. And I noticed that the streets are full of people and things are getting back to normal. Let's hope they stay that way, because when people are out, we need to be as careful as we possibly can in order to avoid a fourth lockdown. Let's hope that doesn't happen, or a third wave. I've lost count now. Well, on the show this morning, we'll be talking about the United States of America, and we'll be joined by John Anderson, and he will be telling us about his views on what's going on over there, his angle on it, because he is an American as well as being British. And he is a particular fan of Biden. He wasn't keen on Mr. Trump at all. And we'll be finding out his views on how it's going over there. And I'll be talking a little bit more about other things in the meantime. But let's have a bit of music as chosen by the guest today. He's chosen I've Just Seen a Face by the Beatles. This is the choice of John Anderson, who will be here very soon.
I've just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Had it been another day, I might have looked the other way, and I'd have never been aware. But as it is, I'll dream of her tonight. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. I have never known the like of this. I've been alone and I have missed things and kept out of sight. But other girls were never quite like this. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Just seen a face, I can't forget the time or place where we just met. She's just a girl for me, and I want all the world to see we've met. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again. Falling, yes I'm falling, and she keeps calling me back again.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Everybody
Peter.
Knows it's John Anderson on the line now. Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine on this beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. Yes, well, we were talking about, these shootings, killings, things going on, people in court. What do you make of it?
Right. Well, first of all, I don't want to be quite as shrill and negative as this is going to sound, but it would be very, very naive to believe that the racism in the United States is focused and starts and stops with the police departments. The police departments are representative of the inherent, embedded, and really ugly racism that does exist. All right, now, ultimately, it's got to be treated within these police departments with better hiring and better training and all that kind of stuff. But if you believe that it's only the police in the United States that have this institutional racism, you're really naive. So, it's something that is weighing heavily on Biden. It's something he has to take some very sound, practical steps to address. But the situation in the United States right now is it's ugly, and it's been ugly for some time.
And this is partially what was, well, we're going to get on to the difference between Trump and Biden later on, I guess, as time goes on. But just right. staying with the story of racism and just basic intolerance. Is it centralized around the Deep South, or is it all through the country?
This
view we have in the UK is that it's the South of America that's got this, not Southern, Southern America has this issue more than anywhere else. Or is it actually endemic around the entire states?
It is endemic around the United States. It changes in nature around the United States. I think that racism in the South comes out of the, 200 years ago and the embrace of slavery and so forth. Is in the South, the whites in the South are very comfortable with black people getting close to them, as long as they don't get any power attached to it, right? In the North, the white racists really don't care how powerful the blacks get, as long as they don't move next door to them.
Right.
So it's a 180 degree phenomena. But trust me, it's always been convenient of the South to be a little sanctimonious about things and say, no, this is a Southern phenomena. It's not. It's throughout all 50 states.
But in just different forms, different relationships, I guess.
Yes.
I suppose, being simplistic about it, back in the South is where the slave trade was probably most prevalent in the United States. Mm-hmm. I guess with the slave trade, there was a lot of communication between blacks and whites because of that situation. They sort of worked together, if you like, because one was in charge of the other, and they actually were very much in each other's company, whereas maybe in the North that wasn't so much the case. Is that a simplistic view
think,
of it?
I think you put your yeah. I look at it this way, right? In the South, black nannies would have raised children, black cooks would have been in the kitchen, maids would have served in the big house. There would have been a proximity issue that the whites were very comfortable with, as long as the blacks were totally servitude to them. Totally different. Not to get on too much of a tangent, you have to remember that the United States, despite the Constitution talking about equality for all men, the Constitution of the United States itself approves of and authorizes slavery. It just doesn't use that word. But if you go into deep into the amendments, you'll see amendments that say, states, people within the states are allowed to own chattel. Chattel is a legal term that simply means anything other than real estate. All right?
Yeah.
So you
own
your
house.
We would
think of it as a cow, but...
That's right. Most people think of it as that. But it means anything other than real estate. And for the purposes of the Constitution, they didn't want to say slaves,
no,
right? Because they had just made the headlines with their, with the front page of the Constitution being so eloquent. But the truth of the matter is the federal government has countenanced, approved, enabled slavery, right? So, there's a lot of scholars in American history that have pointed to governmental support of segregation in the housing market, in all sorts of regulations, in the hiring markets. So, the United States has a long and rich history of this kind of thing. And it's coming to bite it big time.
Yes. Now, for Biden, this situation, let's not fool ourselves. Racism is everywhere. It's in the United Kingdom, much as that report that was modified by Number 10 recently fails to address. We've got our problems here in the UK. But in the States, the whole issue of racism is so embedded in the nature of the nation. How is Biden going to turn this round? Well, he can't, can he? But what can he do?
Well,
to do so?
I think when you're looking at something quite as galactic as that, you have to say what one or two things work, right? Hmm. And then I'll drive those home as hard as I possibly can. And to the degree that it affects the bigger, critical mass of the problem, fine. And I think Biden is doing that in the economy. The one single thing that could even up relationships between blacks and whites is economic prosperity. Okay. You'd be amazed how the effect that can have on ameliorating ill will between blacks and whites when everybody is, at decent paying jobs, able to, buy a nice car, buy a nice house, get their kids dressed properly and in good schools. You'd be amazed how that washes away the crimson tide of racism.
Mm. Yeah, so leveling up, that's a word we've got going on over here, which certainly doesn't appear to be working. But you would say that's what Biden is trying to do. But wasn't Trump trying to do that as well with his plans on making the Rust Belt work again and make them more economic?
Yeah, I mean, I think Trump never had any plans to make the Rust Belt work. He went to the Rust Belt and convinced them that he had plans or that it could be done. But, much smarter people than Donald Trump have wrestled with the reemergence of the Rust Belt. And there's no real easy answers to that. I think what Biden is doing is really stealing a page from many, many years ago with a president by the name of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who put money into things like infrastructure so that you would have employment levels, you would have better highways, better bridges, better airports and ports. And that was a way to keep people working and at the same time lay the groundwork for the ingredients for heightened productivity.
Right. And is that what Biden is doing at the moment?
Yeah. He asked for, and he's going to get permission for, he initially asked for something like $2 trillion. Wouldn't it be nice to have $2 trillion?
I don't even know what that is.
Well, as my wife says, you can shop at Waitrose if you have $2 trillion. So that's what he's asking, and the Congress, the Republicans in the Senate are going to probably, seek to tamp it down a little bit, as the conservative Republicans tend to do, and we'll have a spending bill that'll probably be somewhere around $1.5 trillion, which is no small beer.
Mm. And I guess with isn't it to do with this is where you come in with your economics knowledge. Now is the time to do that sort of thing because everything is so repressed in terms of interest rates and things that this is the cheapest time to borrow money, and it almost is almost free money that you can get hold of now, and that would be an investment to spend it on infrastructure, because not only do you get your new roads and your new buildings and such like, you also get some employment going.
You're right on all those counts. Okay. And we could talk forever about, budget deficits and so on and so forth. But yeah, this is the time. The money is cheap. But what is imperative, US and UK, is that the money be spent wisely and not gratuitously or with political motivation. And here's what I mean by that. Instead of taking that money and saying, well, we're going to, pay off Tory areas up here, we're going to do this, we're going to do that to keep everybody happy, you need a plan. If it's installations of fiber optic, if it's better road systems in Southwest England, whatever it might be, you have to be disciplined so that the investment spending has a direct positive impact on productivity. you know, the diminished productivity, now we're going to talk about the UK for a second. Diminished productivity has been the Achilles heel of the British economy for a long time, 30, 40 years. There's just been a difficulty in getting those productivity figures out, and now is the time to put in place the things to do that.
Right. And so with the situation of let's see that Biden is spending lots of money on infrastructure and getting things built and helping the flow of information and people, the idea being that that generates income for or prosperity for the country, that has been abandoned or not been done, as it seems to me, through the Trump era. That's been sort of lost. But this is the sort of thing that doesn't get noticed. Do you think that's going to be an issue for Biden? Because and he's been noticeably quiet, which I think I want to talk about a bit more later. But the idea that he's doing this stuff and he's not constantly in the face of the American people like Trump was, how is he going to get this message across that he's actually doing something?
Well, you know, Biden is a very shrewd guy, and we need to talk about this, his communication style and his frequency, because he's been criticized by the Republicans. Republicans have said, is he even in charge if he's not tweeting every day? That's how ludicrous things are. But the truth of the matter is we have been so impregnated, we've been so beaten over the head with Trump in the last 4 years of his methodology that we tend to benchmark everything against it, right? The truth of the matter is that Biden will, in a quiet but effective and persistent way, get across the messaging that he needs to do. And he'll do that himself, or he'll do that with his cabinet members, or he'll do it like a lot of other people do with kind of, you know, friendly commentators. But he will get his platform across, the successes of it as they come. But why should he stand up now and crow about things when he doesn't have quite all the successes, doesn't have really any substantial successes, save a very buoyant economic number in March at 916,000 new jobs. Biden will get through the waves here. He'll get the messaging out. It just be far different than our friend Donald.
And it's it's back to the way before Donald. This isn't new behavior. It's actually old fashioned behavior, isn't it?
He did
a press conference, which I don't know anything about, last month for the first time.
Right.
How did that go for him?
Right. Well, it's interesting. I didn't see it as it occurred. I picked it up the next day on the tapes, and I thought he did perfectly well. He uses some techniques that people who stutter use, right? People who stutter need techniques if they find themselves getting off the track. They need to take a pause. They need to refocus. They need to get a rhythm.
Yeah.
And, you know, the our friendly Republicans – never miss an opportunity to kick a man while they're struggling in any way, you know, pointed to it as like, look at here, once again, this guy's, you know, incapable of governing and he's a little bit addled and all this stuff. Joe Biden's not addled. He's not addled at all. He's a very shrewd operator.
I did read something about that. They said that the Republicans have made a mistake because they've really pushed the idea that he is addled. And what they've done there is that they've set the bar really low. So when he appears in public, so long as he doesn't drool, that's a plus because of the way he's been prescribed by the Republicans.
Right.
As I understand.
But I would caution that when he does these things speaking, that people could conclude might be diminished capacity, but might indicate he's slowing down. I think they're more often than not, what I said before, techniques for people who stutter to kind of regain their footing.
Mm. So is he being, he's probably being trained is the wrong word. That's not the word I wanted. But it's being, so right, presentation is everything. Here's what you've got to do, Joe, to present yourself better.
Yeah.
Apparently he's known for rambling. Is that right?
Yeah, I think he can probably go a little bit off piste. God knows Trump could go off piste in ways that were pretty deleterious. I think if we're standing up in front of a nation talking about such intricate matters, we all could go a little bit off piste, right? Let's talk about what he's done and what he's doing and all this kind of stuff. One of the things that's on his to-do list that's daunting is his foreign policy initiatives, right?
Well, we've got an issue there, haven't we?
Putin. Yeah. Well, I mean, Putin's messing around in the Crimea, and the Chinese are indicating that they're not looking very kindly at our activities in the South China Sea. So. He's got a lot on his plate.
Well, let's get on to that. But we'll do it after we've heard another track, bit of music. And I've chosen you a bit of XTC, which I know all Americans love. This is the Ballad of Peter Pumpkinhead.
Peace and pumpkin.
to Pumpkinhead, and we were, before that came on, talking about Putin and what he's doing on the Ukraine border. But I was more interested, well, how can you not be interested in what's going on there? But the point being is the relationship between the two nations, in terms of Trump made out that he was Putin's best mate, and that didn't work out so well. So how do you think Biden's going to approach the working with Mr. Putin?
Well, so far, Biden's foreign policy's kind of stance has been, I wouldn't say bifurcated, but it exists on two planes. He's been very straight talking. He's, you know, he made it clear to Putin he didn't appreciate the poisoning in the UK. He didn't appreciate the imprisonment of the opposition leader just a month or two ago. By the same token, these two nations have to exist on the same planet. I think what Biden will do is he will see this as an opportunity to re-engage with NATO, actually, which you know, Trump's first foray into NATO was just absolutely jarring. He sat at the table and told Macron and Merkel that they were back basically mooches, that they weren't putting enough money on the table, and the United States was doing all the heavy lifting and all the financing. So I think the Ukraine situation has got Europe's attention, and I think Biden will make it clear that the United States wants to re-engage with NATO. They want a vibrant NATO, and we're not going to go in there and start yelling at Merkel and Macron or whoever replaces Merkel. But that's what I think. I think Biden will be strategic about it. Mm. But in the meantime, the Ukraine is, you know, asking for the help of the West, and it depends on how much Putin turns up the heat. There's already been one Ukrainian soldier died, another is injured. But, you know, we're back in chicken diplomacy. You know, it's going to be like a tense little fight off here. So stay tuned. Stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, it's only just started, really, hasn't it? So things tend to roll on. Hopefully not. It just seems astonishing that we still find time to make war whilst there's a pandemic going on. You'd have thought people would hold off a little
well,
bit.
Well, we're ultimate multitaskers, Peter. We
unfortunately, yes, I think you're right. The other thing that's going on for Biden is the NRA in the United States. Now, the NRA were very much bolstered by Trump.
Right.
What's that situation like for the states now? Because it sounds like the NRA are on the back foot now.
Well, they've had some scandals, right? And I think people are fed up with these shootings. And I haven't seen the particulars on the legislation that Biden has crafted for gun control, but just reading the headlines, it's possible in America to implement gun control in a way that doesn't affect, let's say, sportsmen's rights to have a gun, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the Second Amendment was never intended to have a housewife in Dallas, Texas, out there with an AR-15, right? That wasn't the purpose. So hopefully, you know, Biden, if Biden is shrewd, Biden can work with various gun groups other than the NRA and talk to the sportsmen and let them know that they're not going to lose their guns. And but we're just looking for gun control, not gun obliteration. We're not taking the guns out of everybody's hands. We're just making it more difficult to buy.
Right. Australia used to have a gun problem of quite large proportions, but they actually turned it around. Is there something to be learnt, do you think, from Australia for the United... Well, there obviously must be, but do you think there's the motivation to make that happen? Because they have to.
Certainly, there's a motivation on some people's parts, but I it's not going to happen, Peter. I don't know what accounts for it, other than the Second Amendment has just become so ingrained in our cultural DNA. But if you ever raised your hand and said, "Okay, guys, give us all back your guns," there'd be anarchy. There'd be blood in the streets. The Americans don't want their guns fooled with, right? I mean, you know, you're talking to somebody who owned guns himself. I had guns when I was a kid, right? Guns are part of the American culture. It's what we do with them that really is the heinous part of things.
Mm. I mean, they're great fun to shoot. I shot one when I was a kid. But that it's a strange love of them. We don't have that thing over here. We're not. Can it be culturally changed, that attitude, do you think?
Not in our lifetime, no. I think give it a couple generations, you might be able to wash it out. But boy, it's pretty strong now.
Maybe we can move people onto gateway guns and just give everybody tasers.
That's right. I'll tell you what, Peter, there's nothing more chilling than walking into a, you name it, Walmart, Kmart, KFC, McDonald's, and stand in line behind a guy. Pennsylvania, where I come from, is an open carry state. You can just pop one on your hip and walk around.
Mm.
And it's really unsettling, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I saw a photograph of someone, and he's got a pair of shorts on, and it's an ugly picture because he's got these shorts on. They're hitched up around his bum because he's got so many gun belts on. He's got one belt around one leg, another belt around another leg, and one around his waist. Yes. He's carrying three pistols. Why would? Yes. What is the motivation for doing that? Is it to be hard? What is that?
Yeah. I'm not a psychologist, and I don't think we should be talking about matters of a sexual nature on a family program like this. But I think you might want to trace it back into that area.
It is definitely fetishism, though. It seems to me.
You say fetishism. I say penis envy. So.
Well, it's also, I mean, culturally, we watch American movies and things like that. And, you know, the hero pulls a gun on somebody and suddenly he's in control of everything, which
is the
interesting situation. I suppose that is the motivation behind how people feel about guns.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And those kind of idiots are walking around looking for that, because if they stumble across that scenario where they're able to, you know, play the good guy and take out the bad guy, then it adds to the argument for guns to be so widely distributed. Right. You've just justified it. If you say, look, this bad guy got his comeuppance because this, you know, Joey bag of donuts over here had a 9mm in his pocket and took it out and either shot him or, you know, held him at bay or whatever, right?
Save the day.
But
John Wayne is
I'll tell you what, if you talk to police, right, talk to a policeman or talk to a soldier, talk to somebody who's trained in the arts of weaponry, right? It's very easy to watch TV all day long and think you're a superhero with a gun in your hand. It's quite another thing when you're in the real world, right? And it's not the same thing. And people who think otherwise often end up in bad scenarios, right?
Yeah, and the reality is, I mean, I have shot a. It was a rifle I shot, but the pushback on it was quite surprising. And just imagine if people in reality, if someone just picked up a gun and sort of got a pistol and fired it, they'd probably smash themselves in the face.
Well, there is that possibility, I guess.
Yeah. This gun ownership thing seems to be very strongly felt by the preppers in the States. Is preppers the people that have warehouses full of toilet rolls and ready for these people, is that a common conception over there?
Well, you know, I'm sure they're around. There was an awful lot of press attention to them 5-10 years ago. You were always picking up the paper and reading about guys out in Utah that had built these bomb shelters and all this kind of stuff. I don't know, to tell you the truth, that, you know, they not the kind of guys I used to hang around with.
I guess the reason I asked that is because they were enabled or emboldened by Trump over the past few years, and it's another thing that Biden's going to be fighting against, because in the same way that a hard right Tory is not going to vote for Jeremy Corbyn, you're not going to turn right. these people around, are you?
No, and I think you've put your finger on something that's really core to all of this, right? Can Biden strategize or execute a plan that would somehow soften or change the shape of the crazies out there? Well, two things. A, I don't know. I don't know if that's possible. And B, I don't know if it's the best use of his time. I think Biden has to talk to middle America. I think he has to talk to the America that hasn't gone off the rails with MAGMA and red hats and all this kind of absolute insanity. Hmm. It would be fun someday to talk to kind of a cultural sociologist and see how you contend when your culture has gone into this such a severe modality on the fringes, right? Mm. So I don't know.
Right. Well, let's have a bit more music. I failed to line something up, but I've got One More Night for you from Bob Dylan.
Stars are insane, but tonight I'm as lonesome as can be. Oh, the moon is shining bright, lighting everything in sight, but tonight new light will shine on me. Oh, it's shameful and it's sad, I lost the only pal I had. I just could not be what she wanted me to be. I'll turn my head up high to that dark and rolling sky, for tonight new light will shine on me. I was so mistaken when I thought that she'd be true. I had no idea what a woman in love would do. One more night I will wait for the light. The wind blows high above the tree. Oh, I miss my darling so. I didn't mean to see her go. But tonight, new light will shine on me. Shining bright, and the wind blows high above the tree. Oh, I miss that woman so. I didn't mean to see her go, but tonight, new light will shine on me.
Bob Dylan, One More Night, as chosen by guest today, John Anderson, who is here. We're talking about the US of A. And one that I wanted to get onto with the current political situation in the United States is that Donald Trump has gone very quiet, partially because everybody shut him up because he's not allowed to go on. Is he back on Twitter? I don't know.
No, he's not. He's not.
And he's not on Facebook because they've banned him. Extraordinary situation that you wouldn't have dreamt could happen an ex-president has been silenced by the systems because he's so extreme. But he wants to come back, doesn't he?
Well, he does want to come back. And, you know, a couple things about this. He leads the polls among Republicans on the question of who they'd like to run in 2024. But there are some wins against him. The investigation underway in New York State is gaining momentum. Who knows where that's going to head? But if that ends up badly, that will certainly ding his chances. But you'll like this. The other night he had a $40,000 a plate dinner fundraiser in his place in Florida.
Hang on. Did you say $40,000 a plate? So per
person. Yeah, $40,000 a plate. How many of those have you been to, Peter? I don't know.
I've had an expensive dinner or two, but that's not no.
Right. And he was pretty dour. He was pretty negative, and he really lambasted Mitch McConnell, and he went after some guys. And you know, there is a chance. I say this probably more with hope than reality, that he could burn himself out. And that his legal troubles could get so extensive that he could kind of play himself out of the game. Mm. But I'll tell you what, you can never bet against Donald Trump, for doing stupid things. So, he wants to come back. He wants to have a hand in the elections, in the congressional off-year elections. And he's with us.
He's still a firecracker.
Slightly diminished, but still there.
Yeah, so playing against his own side doesn't seem like a strategic move. Because they're the ones that have put him where he is. They're the ones that can get rid of him too.
Well, yeah, it's a little trickier than that because the Republicans have always been a house divided. Initially, right? And then I think what happened over time was that the people that would have initially disliked Trump realized how powerful he was, right? Mm. And said, well, we can't fight him. We might as well join him and ride his coattails. And so that it's for that reason that you might have the Republicans have the appearance of being unified. But in fact, not all those GOP conservatives countenance Trump.
So one of the things that the Republicans have to do is reconfigure themselves or regroup over the next few years whilst Biden gets on with the work he's doing in the hope that they can knock him off his pouch? What am I saying? Off his plinth.
Perch.
Perch, that's what I wanted.
Perch. Right, but here's the thing. What you just said makes a lot of sense. That they probably should reconfigure and then figure out how to run against Biden. But it doesn't strike me it doesn't strike political analysts that's in fact what they're doing. What they're doing instead is they're saying, okay, here's the shape of the party as dictated to us by Trump. And it was highly successful in many ways. It was successful in getting him in initially, and we're gonna stay with that configuration because we have people who seriously believe in him. You know, there's no shortage of governors and congressmen who really believe in Trump. So. Mm. It's not that easy.
It could get messy. It could get messy for them.
It could get messy. Well, it very well could get messy.
Well, then I just want to move off America just for a second and get back into town because you're part of the Totnes Heritage Trust, aren't you? Which is
That's
to do
right.
with the St. Mary's Church.
That's correct.
And they did a fundraiser recently, which got, what, 20 grand?
20 grand plus, very heartening for that to show the support. We have a long way to go. It's going to march of a million miles, but we've got some great leadership. We have John Birch, Lynn Birch, and kind of at the forefront for us. Jim Barlow, the priest, is very switched on. And I think, I think ultimately we're going to get to a point where the church is going to be properly taken care of, and its rightful place in the community is going to be had, because it's a great venue for cultural affairs, for musical, for theatrical presentations. It's just a great space. Yeah. It just has to be utilized correctly.
As well as its original religious requirements, because
that's one thing that
I've heard people rumblings that people are worried that it's not going to be a sacred space anymore, but that's not the case, is it?
No, not at all. They can rest assured that the core mission of that building will not change. It is a beautiful space to worship in. Not to get too personal, but I'll stop in there maybe once or twice a week just to avail myself of the quietude. It's just a beautiful surrounding. It reminds you of the heritage of, not only the heritage of Totnes, but the heritage of one's faith. It's quite a special building.
Yes, it is. It's something beautiful about the inside of it. When you see it, when it's quiet, you can sit in there and it's very peaceful. And there's a thing going on Sunday, did you say, with Johan Van Ass, who is a regular on this show. What's that about?
Well, I don't have all the details, Peter. I appreciate you embarrassing me, catching me out like this. But all I know is I am to report for duty at 2 p.m. on Sunday, to be kind of to keep the queues in line and keep everything going straight. And I think there's going to be some goodies handed out in support of St. Mary's. I don't know any more about that.
That's fine. So, just flagging it up for the people that didn't know that it was even happening. Yeah. So everybody keep an eye on St. Mary's and the gelato shop, because something's going to be going down as a fundraiser for it. So well done for doing all the work you do for all those things. So thank you very much, John Anderson, for joining us on the show this morning and enlightening us about what's going on over the pond.
Always a pleasure, Peter. Always a pleasure.
It's been lovely to have you on the show. And Julie Mullen is waiting in her cat litter room with the cake hole to follow on from this show.
Right.
So stay tuned. Yes. And we're playing out with Dear Father by Yes. Thanks for listening, everyone.
All right.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
So you see, everything is mine. Yeah.